pretty explosive article that dropped today in The Athletic concerning a shadowy figure, at least in terms of the general Maverick population and Maverick fandom, and the clashes within the organization that maybe this guy has caused. The author of said piece is Tim Cato, and Tim is on the phone with us right now. Hello, Timothy.
What's up, boys?
How are you, man? Good. Very good.
Do anything fun today, Tim?
Yeah, you know, just another day in the normal Monday.
Well, congratulations on the piece. It is certainly blowing up, as the kids say. And this one's really, really interesting and enlightening. And I'm guessing there's been a fair amount of blowback. It looks very well sourced. How happy are you with how it turned out and the message it conveys that things are not all great in Mavericks land?
Yeah, I mean, think about the Mavs front office and how much nothing leaks and how much nothing leaks to the league. And then think about, you know, the breadth of what's reported in here. The idea that the team was, you know, in the front office and the power structures and all that entails was reaching an inflection point. I think it's really obvious by, you know, the reporting in the piece that I was able to publish along with Sam Amick, my co-author on this. And I feel like it was always going to be the case. Like, I don't think this story is what is going to push the front office to, you know, a level where, you know, okay, now they realize things are bad. I think a lot of people were frustrated. And so, you know, at least privately, there were concerns. And, you know, I certainly a big public story like this one is going to change the way it's perceived. Certainly shared some light about what all is going on. But I think as you read the story, it's clear that, you know, the front office has not been good enough building a team around Luka Doncic when he scores 46 points and has 14 assists in game 7 of the first round series that just ended last week, and the team's not competitive in the final minute. That's an indictment on them. That's a direct indictment on them. And I think that's really what this piece is about. And then, you know, a lot of details sharing exactly why and how various aspects of the front office has, you know, really struggled and failed to be as good as they need to be.
Would we be talking about this at all? Would this have been written at all? Had game 3 turned out a little bit differently and they hold on to a, you know, basically a 20-point lead in the first half and run out to a 3-0 lead and then win the series, whatever it is. And here we are, you know, within the Utah series, whether it's 3-0 Utah right now or whatever. Are we talking about this? Was all of this kind of off of the collapse more than anything?
It's a good question. I think absolutely it would still have been written at some point by me. This is all, you know, this is not stuff that stemmed directly from, you know, it took about a week to get everything in order to make sure that we felt comfortable with everything that was in the piece that was said to write it correctly. All that said, like, this is stuff I've been hearing for months and I've heard concerns. You know, the roster construction is not something that changed or would have changed even if they just beat the Clippers. You know, and the Clippers kind of melted down because they held on to that lead in game 3. They held it through the first quarter, and, you know, the Clippers just kind of melted down from there. That would have changed all the decision-making, all the unclear delineations of power throughout, you know, people who are making decisions. That wouldn't have changed any of it. And so this is stuff I've been hearing for months. It's certainly stuff that has circulated well around the league and a lot of spaces. So, you know, this is not like, you know, some, you know, singular disgruntled person. This is a, you know, these are details and information and, you know, for people who are directly involved in it, they're concerns about how the front office has operated over the past, years, really. And even longer than that, you know, as I kind of talk about the long tenure of people within the franchise and how Cuban kind of is someone who, you know, likes, you know, trust people and then allows them to stick around a long time.
This is Tim Cato with us from The Athletic. His big piece on the Mavericks is certainly a number of talking points from a number of directions. I would say at its core, and I don't know if you heard the last few minutes of the last segment, it does get the Doncic doubts out there with regards to, you know, modern NBA is making your superstar comfortable and giving him the faith, the immovable faith that these guys are working in my best interest to maximize my value and the ability for us to win a championship together. And I guess that seal is broken today with a piece like this, and kind of puts him out there to the NBA that that the Mavericks have to aggressively attempt to, I don't know, build something worthwhile around him. Do you feel like that was set in motion here in some way?
I think that's a fair reading of it. I also think that, you know, just looking at the history of the NBA, how it operates,
yes,
how teams with superstars are going to, you know, frame what they do around the superstar, and that it is a player empowerment era, and it is a time in this sport where a superstar is going to win or going to go to a place where they can win, and if a franchise can't prove that around him, you know, I think it's very clear that, you know, Luka's future is here as long as he feels like this is a good environment for him. And of course, I make very clear in the piece that, you know, his current desire right now is to stay here long term. You know, that hasn't changed. He's going to sign the Supermax. He didn't. He even said it in the exit interview.
Yes.
Like, that is something. If he really wanted changes, or if he was specifically trying to dictate changes to the team, he could have not said that. He could have held that over their head a little bit and said, hey, by the way, like, I'll sign this, but let's make sure we do this or that. He didn't do that. And I want to be clear that, you know, I don't have any reporting or any reason to believe that, you know, really is the role he's trying to put himself into. But the reality is, if you don't win with a superstar, they're going to go somewhere else to win. And that has consistently proven true over the past decade and really even beyond that in this league.
So do you think that Luka has gone to Mark to voice his concerns over Bob Vulgaris and his role? I don't know if that's insinuated within this article. I don't remember reading about that. But, I mean, wouldn't that be a simple fix and to have a meeting of the minds if there was that big of a problem?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's just Bob. You know, I do think that in a lot of ways this is a story about the front office. This is a story about, you know, the roster and the team not being constructed well enough around him to compliment a player of his capacity, especially as peers of his advance, you know, peers from his very draft who were drafted, you know, a couple picks after him, a couple picks before him, you know, as peers of his advance in different circumstances and settings, sure. But you know, I think a lot of it comes down to that, and it comes down to the success and lack thereof. I also think that, you know, if there is a single fan, you know, a single backer of Bob and his, you know, his role in this franchise, it is Mark Cuban. So, you know, I have no clue. I don't have reporting to say that, you know, Luka did or did not. But it's very clear that Luka and other players have frustrations with this person who they view as, you know, to some level dictating lineups and rotations that are inflexible. And they have concerns just about overall interactions with this person. Like the lead anecdote in the story is about, you know, Luka yelling at Bob during a game. And I say sources say that Bob, you know, believed that, you know, it wasn't directed at him. He didn't intend for Luka to take it that way. But it's not something tied to a single incident or two incidents. It's a consistent pattern, and there's reporting that says that, you know, their relationship was already inflamed and wasn't in a great place even before that incident and even before the second one where, you know, where Bob, that was the last game he physically attended this season. So yeah, I mean, I don't know to answer the specific question, but I think broader than that, you know, this isn't just, you know, a single person or, you know, as much as the headline and as much as the details are going to point to that person, I was always, you know, I'm aware that, you know, that's the reality of the situation. I definitely tried to communicate a situation that was, you know, more nuanced than just one person who some players and other people just disliked.
Yeah. This is Tim Cato with us here, and very, very well done piece today that we're talking about. So There is the one thing that sticks in my head that I just wanted to ask you about while you're on with us, and I wouldn't call it a pointed question at all, but it is one that I am curious about. There's no question that this guy got under Luka's skin a few times and other people in the organization. Fine. There's also no question that the entire NBA feeds off the fact that there are a few assets in this league that are at franchises, and the number one goal of the other franchises is to dislodge him and get them to theirs. Is it a stretch to connect the two? Not saying you did, you know, at least as an airtight case, but there are people everywhere that are annoying that you would probably like to dismiss, but I don't know if that would motivate you changing your place of work if you are the centerpiece of the entire business. So I guess I'm trying to work through that, Tim. Does that make any sense?
Oh, it makes sense as a very classic Bob Sturm question. this is right from the playbook.
All right. Well, what do you think?
No, I mean, so there's a million ways, like sincerely, like there's seven different things that pop to mind or directions I could take this. Well, man, what's the best one to go down? I think I would say that yes, there is always concerns like the NBA and pro sports with the level of money and the level of influence they have developed in, you know, really in culture and in modern pop culture. Yeah, there's always competing influences. There's always a lot going on here. There's always a lot of people who want their voice to rise highest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was definitely, I would say that's definitely something that was under consideration through a lot of the story, which again, like I said, I mean, it was a months long process of getting everything in the row. There could be more. I don't know. You know, I can't say like, oh, I have another thing coming later.
Right.
I absolutely don't. And I don't have anything in the works, but the idea that there is not more to the story, maybe there is. I definitely don't view it as something where, as we talked about before, you know, it's Luka wants to stay in Dallas long term.
Yes,
you know that's in the story, and you know, as much as yes, that's part of the piece. That I think that's important framing for it because that's where the concerns stem from. Is that you know that people could look back in 5 years and say, oh man, we had the generational talent. You know, the singular one, the best player of his generation. And, you know, we messed it up in this way or that way, whatever the case may be. We messed it up and now look at us. Like, you know, he wants out, he wants to get traded, whatever it is. That's a really real concern and fear. And I think that's the stronger thing communicated in this piece, much more than the Luka stuff, which to me, like we discussed earlier, is just the reality of having a superstar on a franchise.
Yeah.
It's just the way of doing business in that, you know, even if it wasn't reported in the story, like anybody could look at the situation and say, well, you know, that roster wasn't good enough and they better figure it out in the next couple of years, because even if he signs an extension, you know, there is still concern that, you know, unless you're really winning, and that's just something, you know, Luka has won every single place he's ever been in his career. Once you start doing that again, like, yeah, he's, you know, he's not Dirk Nowitzki, because no one will ever be Dirk Nowitzki. He doesn't have that patience. I think Dirk is singular in that light. So I think that you look at the story and that part to me is not the primary takeaway, as much as there is just internal concerns and outward expressals of frustration at just how this has operated and what has come to be over the past few seasons in this front office.
So real quick here, you know, I reached out to Mark after the article dropped and was asking him a couple of questions, and he just wanted to get out there. And I'm sure that, you know, he's voiced his frustrations with you, and he you know, called the article a bunch of BS and all that. But he said, I want to be clear, Luka definitely has my ear at all times, always, just like Dirk did. We have a great relationship, and if something is bothering him, he tells me. And then he also said that the idea that there's a shadow GM is trash. So, again, I don't know if that's the phrasing that set him off within the article, but that didn't please him either. Which, look, if somebody is going after it could be anybody. If you're going after someone's team, then they're going to take offense to it no matter what.
Right, and I think one of the quotes in the article from an anonymous team source that talks about Mark Cuban is the most powerful person in the organization, but whoever he's listening to is second. I think there's a lot of validity in that, and that's kind of proven true over the years. The idea that, you know, a person who does have, you know, Mark's backing would have say over, you know, a lot more than their job title would dictate. I don't know. I mean, y'all cover the scene. Y'all seen the scene for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Like the idea that, you know, like that's not a crazy idea. It's not necessarily something that, you know, it needs a report to say. I think as you guys, like you tell me, over the course of viewing and seeing this franchise and how Cuban operates, you know, that really is in a lot of ways his MO, right?
Yeah. No, it's, look, there's a lot of it does check out in just in the intuitive way of the way things have operated. The one thing, and I know we can't keep you forever here, but the other thing that does pop to mind is that Rick Carlisle does not seem like the guy to suffer fools, and therefore, if he feels like there is a fool at a high perch, I would think Rick would have a hard time playing along.
Right, right. And to me, this goes back to the same idea that, you know, if Rick is a very adaptable coach, I've been struck by the way that he's adapted to talking about Luka over the years. Like,
yeah.
It was really like 2 months in. And he went from, you know, a similar shtick that he has with all rookie point guards and doesn't want turnovers to really, you know, putting this guy up as, okay, this is the next phase of the franchise. And I'm giving him a lot more freedom, and left unsaid a lot more freedom than I would any other player who, you know, didn't have the same pedigree. In the same ways, we've also seen Rick really adapt to analytics lately. I think, like, we all know the you know, him saying the post up is a bad play. You know, nobody really does it anymore. He was talking about Kristaps Porzingis. He was, you know, kind of responding to some criticisms from I think it was inside the NBA. But you know, he kind of went off in that way. And it's, you know, I've seen a lot more analytics just casually thrown around in this dude's everyday life. So, you know, in press conferences and things like that, I should be more specific. And so the idea that this guy, that Rick Carlisle is very good at adapting to the situation around him. If he viewed Bob as having the level of influence that he needed to, you know, maybe it wasn't, you know, maybe Bob wasn't saying you have to do these lineups, or you have to do these rotations. And maybe in a lot of instances, Rick was like, yeah, this makes sense. But there is a power structure that I feel like the reporting unveiled is that, you know, people who, you know, have, you know, who aren't the, you know, the 1-2 aren't the people you've been listening to, you know, that they need to make sure that they're, you know, they're tracking with what the group, you know, what the people who do have influence over the team say. And I guess, you know, that's kind of a vague answer in some ways, but I think that's kind of where I would go with Rick and just kind of talking about where he stands in all this.
Tim, great job. Thank you for your time, and thank you for the piece, and we'll talk with you soon.
Thanks, y'all.
Thanks,
Tim.
Go.
That's Tim Cato from The Athletic and his Mavericks piece, not his Rick Carlisle piece, is worth checking out.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.